Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When violinist Lisa Donlinger was studying music at the University of Iowa and later at the University of Indiana, she played with a number of different symphony orchestras. But post-graduation, she decided to head for Los Angeles to see if she could make it in the music business, and make it she has. She's a Grammy-nominated artist who's performed with high-profile musicians as diverse as Celine Dion, Lady Gaga, Sir Paul McCartney, Beyoncé, Kiss, and many others. She also has a long list of TV credits. She's played on dozens of movie soundtracks, and now she's released her first album. It's called Movies and the Masters, and all the songs on the album are mashups of movie themes and well-known classical pieces. And let's play a little sample here. This is called The Magnificent Hoedown. That's just a little bit of The Magnificent Hoedown from Lisa Donlinger's Movies and the Masters. And she is with me now. She's returned to her home state for a visit. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. It's great to see you.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we chose The Magnificent Hoedown because it's a little bit of a throwback for you, going way back, or a little bit back in time, to when you were in the Miss Iowa pageant. What was that, 1998?
Yeah, that's the year I won.
Mm-hmm. And you played Hoedown as your talent performance, right?
I did. Yeah, I did. And that was the time when the Beef commercial was using it. So it was a really well-known melody. Sometimes with the violin and the pageants, you want to do something that's accessible to all the audience and high entertainment value. So I figured that would be something everybody knew. And yeah, I was able to do that. It was a fun time. And I was able to wear an outfit that Reba McEntire wore on her tour. She allowed me to borrow it for that performance at Miss America. So it's very special.
Oh, wow. So you are back in Iowa now to release your album, but also in conjunction with the Miss Iowa pageant that's mm-hmm. taking place this week and this weekend. Tell me what you're going to be doing with the pageant.
Yeah, it's going to be my first time back judging, and I'll be performing a few of the nights as well. So when they asked me to do that back in January, I figured this is great timing. It actually gave me a deadline to finish the album. So I thought, okay, this is perfect. I get to go back and be a part of the pageant, which I enjoyed so much. And then I have to finish my album. And it was definitely a big push to the finish. We got it done. So I'm happy to be back here and everything's ready to go.
So back when you decided you wanted to be a part of the Miss Iowa pageant in the first place, I mean, you were a very serious classical musician. What convinced you to take part in a beauty pageant?
Yeah, it took a bit of convincing. The thing that started it was I won the Bill Riley State Fair Talent Show, which was on TV in 1996. So some people, I guess, saw me on TV and they contacted the Miss Iowa pageant board. So they called me and asked if I would be interested. And actually, the first time they called, I said, no, I don't think so, because I was, you know, I was valedictorian. I was very serious about academics, very serious about music. I didn't quite see how the pageant was fitting into that situation. But then they were pretty persistent and said, well, but do you know how much scholarship money you can get from this pageant? And it's the largest scholarship organization in the world for women. So I started researching it a bit more and actually realized that the Miss America pageant is so much different than what you see on TV. When you see it on TV, it kind of looks like all the other pageants where maybe like the swimsuit is the only important thing. But really, that's kind of the smallest part of that program. It's about scholarship, philanthropic endeavors, your talent, doing a lot of public speaking, being up on current events. So it was actually quite a big challenge once you get involved in all of it. So I was very thankful. I was very lucky at the University of Iowa. I had scholarships completely all the way through. My first year at Indiana Masters, I had a few loans, and then I had scholarships. So you can also use it to pay off your loans, which I did. And then I was able to be debt-free going into the professional world, which is pretty rare. So I was really thankful to do that.
When you were growing up in Des Moines and you were very serious about your academics and very serious about your music, what kind of future did you envision for yourself?
I did always think I would be a musician. I happened to be good at math. And I remember a lot of my math teachers saying, you should be an engineer. You know, we need more female engineers. And It sounded great. And actually, my first year at the University of Iowa, I was going to double major as a math major and violin. But then I found out I would be in the practice room for 4 hours and then in a math lab for 4 hours and probably not ever have any kind of life. So I knew that music was going to be it. I was kind of doing it as a backup, but I knew somehow, even though I didn't see anybody really doing what I envisioned myself doing, I just believed that was what I had to do. So,
and what did you envision yourself doing?
You know, the vision changed a lot. Originally, I thought I would be in a full-time symphony teaching at the college level. And actually, when I finished the whole time as Miss Iowa, I auditioned for orchestras and I did win some jobs. And that's when I realized it wasn't what I wanted to do.
What made you realize that?
Well, after the year as Miss Iowa, I was able to do a lot of things. I was able to use a lot of my talents as well. So I sing also. I was able to sing, kind of reminded myself how much I loved to sing. Because I sang my whole life, except for like the last 2 years of college. I got, you know, really intense in violin. But I then went to Indiana and started singing again. So I wanted to kind of revamp that. I like playing all styles of music, not just orchestral, sitting in the symphony. I realized that I wanted to talk to more people. I wanted to do more school appearances. I wanted to do more public speaking. So yeah, I just realized I was kind of too young to just play in a symphony and just teach at college. So I gave up the jobs and just moved to LA with no job. Sounds like a good fit, right?
Right. What was that like, that first year in LA?
Really, really difficult. Really difficult. I had been lucky before that I'd met a lot of other supportive musicians who wanted to help each other. LA isn't always like that. There are definitely supportive people there. But in the entertainment industry, I think anytime there are larger money at stakes in any field, it's more competitive. And so people weren't always maybe so happy that I had moved there and not so happy to help me find jobs in the beginning. So the first year was me weeding through a lot of people, finding the really good people that are wonderful and genuine, and maybe leaving other people a bit behind. So
when you got out to LA and you were looking for jobs, I mean, being a musician, you were freelancing. You
right.
were going to be working for many different people in many different circumstances. What was your dream? What were you hoping to have happen?
Well, kind of what I'm doing now. I definitely wanted to work on movie soundtracks. I definitely wanted to work in TV and then working with other artists doing record dates. At that point, I wasn't really thinking of... Well, maybe a little bit, but not so much develop the idea of being a solo artist. It was more, I just want to work in the studios. I want to do all that fun music. And I was really thankful. You know, I would audition and I would play for people. And then, you know, word of mouth is basically how LA works. So you get on certain lists and they realize you're good at certain things. And then you're hired for those kind of jobs. So I started working the thing. I mean, it took a number of years, of course, like a lot of hard work before I got the jobs I really wanted. But, you know, starting working in TV on shows like American Idol and, you know, the Grammy award shows, things like that, you know, starting to work in the movie soundtrack industry and then record dates for other artists. So that part was all great. But I'm the kind of person, it's fortunate and unfortunate. I mean, I like it about me, but I don't like it about me that I always have to be pushing, okay, what's next? So I've done this and that was great and wonderful. But now what do I have to do to push myself to the next level? I want to keep trying to do more things. And that's why I decided to do the album, because I wanted to really push, okay, what can I create? What can I make as an artist myself?
What was the first job you got that really made you feel like I made it?
I remember because my lip was trembling. It was the Academy of Country Music Award Show. And I was performing with Martina McBride, who's always been one of my favorite vocalists. And I was literally so happy and so full and excited that I could not stop my lip from trembling. And all I could think was, oh my gosh, I'm on TV and I don't want anyone to see that my lip is trembling. But that one I remember, having that feeling like, okay, this is it. Because for me, I think of everything I do, TV is my favorite, because I love the live performance aspect. I love having a huge crowd there to feed off of. But then to also know that what you're doing is going to millions of people in the world, for me, that's like the biggest rush, to think that you can touch that many people at once with something that you're doing.
Tell me what it's like to work with. I mean, you've worked with so many artists. I can't pick one, but I would love for you to pick one of the artists that you've worked with and tell us what it's like to be involved in one of these, you know, huge productions, these concert tours.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the person that I often go back to is Celine Dion. I worked with her for 4 solid years, as also doing like some record dates with her here and there. The reason that I always talk about her is I feel like she's really a model of, you know, what to do right in the entertainment industry. I mean, you see a lot of people maybe doing the wrong things, being in the tabloids for the wrong reasons. She despite being so famous for so many years, still knows that family is the most important thing. When you talk to her, she would much rather talk to you about her kids than anything else. It's really true. Like, all the things that, you know, you hear about her are really true. She's super genuine, super wonderful, very goofy. You know, she makes it more of a family environment where everybody's included the same. You know, I mean, it's just, people always ask, is she really that nice? And I can honestly say that she really is. And it's a good feeling to be able to say that. And in addition to her just being a good person, she's a great artist to watch as a musician, because every night the quality of what she's doing is so high. She could be making an album every night, every show that she does. And that's another thing that's rare. You hear artists that sound amazing. There's a lot of studio magic that we can do, right, in the studios, changing pitch, changing sounds. But she's the real deal. She really sounds like that. And it's inspiring.
All right, so what was it like to work with Kiss?
Kiss was actually a funny story. We were playing on one of the finales from American Idol, and they were performing with Adam Lambert. That was the year that he was one of the finalists. And I remember the story very well because I was actually pregnant with my son at the time. I was 5 months pregnant. And they do a lot of pyro on their shows. And so the fire marshal came to the rehearsal because they had to approve how much pyro they were going to be using. And it seemed like pretty tame, so they got the approval. But their tour manager told me, because he saw that I was pregnant, he said, just so you know, this is only about 10% of what they're going to do in the show. So to keep you safe, you know, we might need to move you. So we played on the song of theirs called Beth, which was more of a ballad with strings that we played. And then they were going to do something else where they were going to go up on a big stage. And I just hightailed it out of there. And as soon as everybody else saw it, they evacuated the stage as well. So everybody was kind of protecting me in my little pregnant belly. So.
And then everybody was safe. No one got hurt.
No one got hurt.
That's nice.
But it was a little dicier than what they thought it was going to be. So. Yeah, they like their big shows.
Now, right now, you know, you have been working on your album, and I can imagine that you have a lot of artistic freedom with that. Working with an orchestra that's doing a movie soundtrack, or working with an artist that has very specific expectations for what you're going to bring to the performance, contrast that with working on your own project, because I can imagine that, I mean, in one case, you don't have much freedom at all.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of a big reason I do still play in orchestras live as well, just as a part-time thing. But again, it's not your decision. You're not creatively involved. You do what the conductor says so that it sounds great together. And that's your job. And then, as you said, on movie soundtracks, you are doing exactly what the composer wants. And for the film, that's the other thing that's really interesting about that world. It's not really just the music. It's what is the music doing to serve the picture and serve the story. So that's a whole different role.
When you're recording a movie soundtrack, do you get to see the film? Do you know what's going on?
Yeah, we do get to see. It depends on where you're located as a violinist. Sometimes our backs are slightly to the screen, and obviously, you know, you're really focused on the music, but then they'll do a playback, and then you can turn around and see. So I've definitely been able to see some scenes before, and, you know, you can't take pictures or release any information. I remember I played on the soundtrack for Finding Dory, for example, and I was very excited about that because my son's favorite movie was Finding Nemo. Wow, I'm playing in something my son's going to love. And it started very early days. I mean, that usually the film scoring comes the very last part of the movie. The movie's done, then they add the music. But Finding Dory, they kind of do it in pieces. So, like, we did some very early on in the movie where the animation wasn't even completely done. And then we did more later on. So you have to be careful not to release, you know, any pictures or anything like that. And there's a lot of disclosure forms that you fill out in the music industry. So all those roles, you're doing something that somebody else wants you to do, and it's, you know, that's your job there. So I think, you know, there's a group of us musicians that's fine, that's all they want to do, but then there's those of us that need to have that creative outlet. Okay, so that's great, but what am I going to do? You know, what is my voice? What do I want to do when I'm doing my own project? So that really fed me to make this album.
And where did the idea for mashing up movie music and the music of the masters come from?
Well, I had one specific idea first, which was Braveheart. And I went to a composer friend of mine named Chad Raymond in LA, and I had a meeting with him and kind of talked him through my idea. I said, I'm hearing these melodies in my head where I hear a movie soundtrack, but then I hear this other melody that would be really cool together with it. And, you know, after shows like Glee that would mash up just two pop tunes, I thought that idea was kind of cool, that, wow, you're making something new in a way you haven't heard it before, but these tunes that are familiar. So I talked him through the idea. Thank goodness he saw my vision. We got working on Braveheart and put Jupiter from the Planets together with that. made a video for that. And that did well. And then just kind of one by one, I would hear melodies. We did one with Pirates of the Caribbean and Beethoven 9, for example. And that one he didn't want to do because he said, everybody does Pirates. We don't want to do another Pirates. I said, yeah, but nobody's done it with Beethoven 9. So that got him excited again. You know, we got together. We hashed that one out. I know a lot of the ideas I've had he thought were absolutely crazy. Putting together Stravinsky's Firebird with Jai Ho from Slumdog Millionaire sounds kind of weird. But it works in the end. So yeah, I would just hear melodies in my head and we just kind of get to work on them.
It struck me that in a way you're bringing together that Lisa, who was the very serious student and the very serious classical musician, with Lisa, who has spent all of her career in pop music.
Right. And, you know, that's always been a big idea of mine, is to bring classical music to people who think maybe I don't like classical music. But I remember early on in my career, people would listen to me practice, even if I was just playing scales or something. And I think being a singer, I understand how to play the violin as a voice. And so people connect with it a little more. And they would say things like, you know, I didn't think I liked the violin, but I like what you're doing. And so that kind of ignited a spark in me that I could be a voice for maybe types of music that people think, well, I don't want to go to a symphony. I'm not sure what to do. I don't know when to clap. Seems a little too stuffy for me, so I'm going to stay away from it. But the concerts that I want to do will incorporate the audience. One of the pieces has a drum line, for example, as part of the piece. So I want to collaborate with local high schools and bring their drum lines into the auditorium, like down the aisles, so people are surrounded by that. You know, for the Bollywood piece, I want to have scarves where people in the audience are waving scarves and, you know, part of it. And so they don't feel like they're so separated from that music anymore. Well, so that's definitely been a big goal of mine.
Lisa Donlinger, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Very appreciated.
Lisa Donlinger, her album is Movies and the Masters. She's back in Iowa to perform at and act as a judge at the Miss Iowa pageant this week. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.